You're listening to a Prairie Punk House Companion right here on the Prairie Punk Press Network.
The views expressed by any host or any guest on the Prairie Punk House Companion are the personal views or opinions of the people who express them and do not reflect the views or opinions of anyone else on the show or any company, employer, or any other organization that the individual expressing them has or will affiliate with in the past, present, or future. Hi, everybody. You're listening to a Prairie Punk House Companion. We are on episode 7. I'm Neckbone.
Hi, I'm Jerbear, and I think I have poison ivy on my pinky finger.
And I don't. Sorry, that sucks.
Cool. Yeah, I just noticed it. It's real itchy. I got little blisters popping up. I hardly ever get poison ivy.
Is that from your yard?
Yard work yesterday.
Yeah. I was walking my dog, and there was a guy mowing his front yard. Mm-hmm. That I walked by, who was wearing Trump Nugent 2024 t-shirt.
Gross.
Yeah. Nugent, I was like, man, if I could think of somebody even worse than Donald Trump, Ted Nugent might be on the top of that list.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's probably going to pick Tim Scott, not Ted Nugent, but.
Yeah. This guy was really, he was.
Well,
I was kind of hoping that my dog would stop and piss on his house. That'd be funny. Yeah.
I mean, Donald Trump and the Nuge do have stuff in common. They like young girls.
And one of the reasons that I wore my alma mater's sweatshirt tonight, I'm wearing a University of Kansas sweatshirt.
You guys can't see it, but I can.
You can see it.
I do. I see it.
And we're, talking about the campus protests a little bit. I know this, our timeline right now is around the year 2000, mm-hmm. But we're going to jump way ahead to right now.
Yeah. We're not an overtly political podcast, but since we are punk rockers and activism is a pretty large part of punk rock, I think we have a responsibility to talk about it. And I think that will lead to a conversation about some of the activism we have done and are currently doing in our lives. I don't know about you, I've never been particularly adroit at organizing, but I have taken part in activism of various forms throughout my life. So it is May 6th. It is about a week after the cops stormed Columbia University, and militarized cops who are ironically or unironically, I don't know, maybe it's just apropos, have been trained by the IDF, because I don't know if you know this or not, but police get sent to Israel to train with the IDF because they do such a good job of crushing Palestinian protests. Anyway, so those fucking cops stormed Columbia University, and it is a blatant violation of those students' First Amendment rights to protest. And it's bullshit. UCLA cops shot a protester in the face with rubber bullets and split his face open. I know they shot at more students, but I heard of that one in particular having like severe damage to their face from a rubber bullet. And universities throughout the country getting stomped on by fascists. Yep. There people seem to be really concerned with anti-Semitism on campus by Jewish students protesting a genocide.
Right. And to be clear, yes, the students who are protesting against Israel and are supporting the Palestinian people many of them are Jewish students.
Yeah.
It's the people who are on the correct side of history, and their voices are being completely ignored by the press, by Israel, who are trying to completely conflate the state of Israel with Judaism in general. And I know you've seen it on the news too, of them saying, well, they're not real Jews. And it's like, okay, well, you don't get to decide that. You're not the gatekeeper of Judaism.
And that's, I mean, I would say that saying that is anti-Semitic in itself.
Yes.
And, you know, their last weekend, they're in, I think, Charlotte, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. There was a actual neo-Nazi march with no press coverage. And no cops showed up, and nobody screamed about that anti-Semitism. So I think that neo-Nazis marching is much more malicious and noteworthy as a negative than college students standing against fascism, genocide, ethnic cleansing, and the creation of an ethno state in the Middle East. So I and, want to be 100% clear, I am anti-fascist first. If I see fascism, I am opposed to it. I don't give a fuck who was doing the fascism. I am opposed to that. So when I speak out about the actions of the Israeli government, I am speaking out against it from a place of anti-fascism.
Yes.
I have been opposed to Nazis for over 25 years. I have been a target of neo-Nazis. I am not anti-Semitic. I am anti-fascist. Just to make that 100% fucking clear. Because I have been called things because of my stance against the violence that Israel is doing and has been doing for 75 years against the Palestinian people.
And just to make it abundantly clear, so we don't get asked this question, no, we do not support Hamas. And to be clear too, Israel is a nation state. It is not a religion. It's not an ethnic group. It is a nation state. Criticizing Israel is no more anti-Semitic than when you criticize Saudi Arabia being Islamophobic.
Right.
Or if you criticize the United Kingdom being anti-Christian. Yes, the United Kingdom is a religious nation state. The King of England, King Charles currently, is the head of the Church of England. But you can criticize the United Kingdom without criticizing Christianity or even the Church of England more specifically. You can criticize Saudi Arabia without criticizing all of Islam. And you can criticize the State of Israel without criticizing Judaism. They are separate things.
Yep.
We need to stop conflating them as being the same thing.
Yeah. 100%. That said, shall we move on to activisms that we have done?
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Yeah. Just as I was telling you earlier this week, the protests on the campus reminded me of the protests we did during the invasion of Iraq in 2003. And I don't know about you. I think at that point, were you, what year did you go back to Wichita?
I moved back in 2002.
Okay. So you were back. I was in Kansas City. I assumed that you went to protests in Wichita.
I didn't. I was too wrapped up in my own shit and addictions and stuff. I mean, I was vocally anti-war and talked about it all the fucking time, but I didn't go to any protests or anything. I didn't know anybody that was doing protests at the time. Nobody I was around was doing any kind of activism. I think at that time we were all just too wrapped up in playing music and getting as wasted as possible. So I didn't actually do anything back then, which, you know, I should have, but I didn't. I got, you know, I got really cynical and burned out on activism in Lawrence. Sometimes it felt like I couldn't do enough when I was doing the best that I could, the when I was doing what I was mentally and emotionally capable of doing at the time. And sometimes it felt like that wasn't enough and that I was a bad person for not doing more. So I was like, fuck it, and didn't do anything for a long time, which, you know, it's too bad that I felt that way, but that's how I felt at the time.
Yeah, understandable. That was when I started getting, because it's interesting you said it, because we started out with me being fiercely anti-political, and you were very political.
Right.
And then you kind of got cynical around that time, and I jumped headfirst into activism because it was just, I'd moved back to Kansas City from Lawrence, and there was just so much activism going on around me. I started doing Food Not Bombs with some people, which, for those of you who don't know, Food Not Bombs is an organization that makes vegan meals for homeless people. They usually use ingredients that are donated by grocery stores.
Or dumpstered.
Donated or dumpstered from grocery stores or other food supply places. And at least in Kansas City, I can't speak for all Food Not Bombs.
I think it's vegan.
Branches.
I think one of the tenets of it is to be vegan food, but I could be wrong. Maybe that's just what it was in Lawrence. I don't know.
That's what it was in Kansas City, too. And there was a church that let us use their kitchen in Westport to cook all the food and serve it to a high homeless density area in Midtown Kansas City called The Island in Westport.
The Island. It's where everybody, that's where we used to panhandle. Or I don't know if you did. I did.
Yes. I think the last time I panhandled was in Wichita. I don't think I did after Wichita.
Okay.
Cause I had my big cushy, you know, Pizza Hut jobs and stuff like that. So I was doing okay.
Did you,
I think at that time I worked at Little Caesars. So, yeah. But I always worked at some pizzeria.
Did you, I think I want to say between 2018 and 2020, Kansas City cops, busted up a Food Not Bombs up there, and they poured bleach all over the food that people had made for homeless people to eat because they didn't have a permit and they couldn't prove that they were following food codes or whatever. So they just poured bleach on the food instead of allowing it to be fed to people who needed food. And, you know, one of the things is with Food Not Bombs is like churches and things don't serve every day. And Food Not Bombs tries to provide a meal for people when other services aren't providing a meal, you know, and it's healthy and nutritious and available for them. You know, and it's Food Not Bombs, so it's about peace. It's typically leftists doing it, so, you know, cops always side with the fascists, so if leftists are doing anything, cops are going to come and bust that shit up because they're fucking fascists, and they support power, and Food Not Bombs is in opposition to power, so...
I think we got harassed by cops a couple of times. I was never there when anything major went down. We didn't have a bleach poured on our food or anything like that. This was 2003. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe it was a different time. I'm not saying that they didn't do stuff like that. But, you know, this was before everybody advertised everything that was happening on social media. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the cops just didn't know what we were doing.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that probably helped a lot, was that we were just there, and by the time they even noticed that we were there, we were already there, fed people, and left.
Like, I wasn't around when you were doing stuff like politically.
I went to a lot of protests. Active. There were tons of protests. There were protests on the plaza. Mm-hmm. I think might have even been weekly protests on the plaza, maybe more than weekly. I remember going to a lot of plaza protests. Mm-hmm. And I remember all the, you know, middle class, you know, the plaza's a wealthier part of Kansas City. Mm-hmm. It's mostly middle class people pretending to be rich people. Yeah. Let's be real. I mean, actual rich people would laugh at the people on the plaza who are pretending to be rich. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's an upper middle class area, mm-hmm. That is for shopping and dining and things like that. It's very clean, very pretty neighborhood. They don't care for things happening there. They definitely don't like homeless people there. Mm-hmm. And they have, on top of the Kansas City Police, they have private security walking around all over the place.
Yeah, it's a heavily policed area.
Heavily policed. And I remember walking up and down 47th Street on the plaza protesting, and our whole group moving toward State Line Road from the river to State Line Road, mm-hmm. On the plaza. And I just remember this, you know, standard suburban middle-aged guy, probably about the age I am now, mm-hmm. Just who was just standing, you know, they're dining outside, him and his, I assume, wife or a woman about his age he was with. He was standing and just yelling at us and saying, shame on you, shame on you, shame on you. And the funniest thing about that is, I mean, he might have been conservative, he might have been a liberal. I mean, liberals all also supported that war too.
They sure did.
So not really sure, but I do know that whether you're conservative or liberal now, for the most part, you agree that the invasion of Iraq was a bad idea.
Terrible idea.
Everybody is in agreement about that.
Yeah.
That's that thing we were talking about earlier. Liberals, you know, everything in hindsight, mm-hmm. everything revolutionary in hindsight was a good idea.
Sure.
The only thing that's not a good idea is what's happening right now.
Right. Yeah. Presently, they love to rattle those sabers and bang on the drums of fucking war, just like they are in Ukraine and Israel.
You know, these are the same people who were condemning, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X back in the 60s, who now celebrate holidays with their name on them.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the same people. And now that we look back on the invasion of Iraq as a bad idea, they are quick to say, oh, yeah, I always thought that it was a bad idea to invade Iraq. Well, okay, somebody thought it was a good idea.
Yeah. I went to, I think you were there. I know Sarah was there, our guest mm-hmm. from last episode. There was mm-hmm. a march on 47th Street. I believe it was prison abolition and free Mumia.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I went to, I don't know, back in the 90s, I went to probably 10 Mumia marches and protests. But yeah, there was one in the plaza that I went to. The first thing I actually took part in, let's see, probably would have been helping to start an anti-racist action in Wichita due to all of the Nazi skinhead violence that was going on at the time. I don't know if you came to those meetings or not. It was at Javaluya.
Oh,
where Nathan used to work. Actually,
I went there for, I don't think I knew what it was. It might have been for anti-racist action. Mm-hmm. Somebody dragged me to something at Javaluya that was an organization, like people were organizing.
It was probably me.
I just remember thinking, like, and at the time, I don't think I knew what it was for, and mm-hmm. I don't think I knew what anti-racist action was back then. But I just remember thinking, like, oh, I just don't want to get political.
After all the meetings, we sat in my van and drank rum. I remember that.
Oh, so I definitely went to that. That was, I think that was one of the first mm-hmm. times because the Fannings were there too, or at least one of the Fannings was there.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah. And so,
yeah, might have been. I think it was Aaron.
Yeah. I don't even remember how many meetings we had, but we organized a protest at City Hall in Wichita for Mumia. We may have done it twice. I don't remember for sure. I remember going to multiple Mumia protests at City Hall. You know, and they were uneventful. The cops came and asked us what we were doing, asked us who Mumia was. They didn't even know who Mumia was. And then kind of laughed at us for protesting somebody in prison for killing a Philadelphia cop in the early 80s.
81.
Yeah.
Yeah, 81 or 82, I think.
Yeah, they were just like, well, why are you doing that here? And we were just like, well, because it's important. And he's on death row. And, you know, we fucking care. And, you know, back then he was constantly up for execution. And, you know, it would get appealed and there would be a stay or whatever. That was the threat at that time, was he was so close to being executed. He's off death row now, but
I think serving a life sentence or something now.
Still trying to get him out. He's had a couple really bad health scares a couple years ago. I don't know how he's doing at this point, but
I remember that because I remember, I don't think I was actually at the protest, but I was hanging out with people who were about to go to a Mumia protest in Wichita. This is back when I was, I don't know, like 17, 18 or so. And I remember I asked, who's Mumia? And I got laughed at.
That's not cool.
That was my first.
And see, shit,
that was my first memory.
Shit like that is why activism turns people off, because.
Absolutely. And that was one of.
There's no fucking reason for that, especially a kid.
Right. I was
17
like
year old kid.
17, 18 years old. And it was the 90s. Yeah. This is before you could just whip out your phone and Google it real quick. You know, like if it's not in the Encyclopedia Britannica, you're not looking it up.
Right.
So, and you know, that is not that episode specifically, but that was, you know, that attitude that made me in the 90s want to be apolitical.
Right.
And, you know, it's not completely the fault of my left-wing counterparts at the time, because they were also 16, 17, 18 years old, and they had just, I mean, they were brand new to activism. They were brand new to left-wing politics. They were brand new to, like, anarchist ideas. And, you know, it's like when somebody...
That probably has a lot to do with that attitude. Converts
to a new religion.
They got a lot to prove.
It's like when somebody converts to a new religion, and they're suddenly the most zealous about it.
Because it's new,
where they're just like
exciting.
It's new, it's new, and it's exciting, and they think they know everything about it, and everybody else who doesn't know about it is unenlightened and stupid. And I remember feeling that way about other things, like when I discovered punk rock and being like, "Oh, anyone who doesn't like punk is just stupid." I guess. Same thing when I discovered hip hop. Anyone who doesn't like hip hop is just stupid, I guess. Like, it's just whenever you discover a new thing, you're suddenly an expert about it. And anyone who doesn't know what you know is just a fucking idiot. But now that I've gotten older, I guess, you know, I try to dissuade younger people that I do encounter still from behaving that way.
Right.
Like, look, people are going to have questions. Sometimes people have good faith questions.
You got to start somewhere,
you know.
You don't you don't wake up with all the knowledge. You got to start somewhere, and recognizing that other people have to start somewhere maybe just comes with age and empathy. I don't know, but yeah, there were a lot of fucking dicks in the activist community, especially back then. And I don't think it was gatekeeping. I think it was just being young and having something to prove. So that's then moving to Kansas City. I worked at Wild Oats, and we always donated to Food Not Bombs. So I knew a lot of the people doing Food Not Bombs up there. I didn't do a lot of activism in Kansas City. That's just not what we were doing. I don't know. I cared about stuff. And I was vocal about stuff. I've always been vocal about things, but I haven't always done shit about it.
You're more interested in drinking, I think.
Yeah, for sure. You know, there was that march on the plaza, and I think that was probably all I did in Kansas City. There wasn't I didn't see any overt, like, Nazi activity in Kansas City. I knew they were there, and I know other people that had encounters with them, but I never saw any. And there was a pretty good sized sharp scene in Kansas City, and they handled shit really well. So I never saw that shit.
They just wouldn't take that shit. And the scene was bigger in Kansas City.
It was, yeah.
There was the Sharps. There was, I mean, way more punks. Mm-hmm. Even like the metalheads, I mean, were, you know, anti-racist metalheads. Yeah. Like, I mean, it was just a much more inclusive environment in general. Mm-hmm. And Sarah touched on this in the last episode of just like, you know, Kansas City was always a place that kind of was pretty good with inclusion for the most part, compared to other places, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, they were there, but they weren't the majority like they were here in Wichita.
Right. Yeah, they were more in places like Wichita and Topeka and Manhattan.
Yeah.
Those were kind of like more where they lived. And now Lawrence.
And then I moved to Lawrence, and like every Friday for a while, maybe not every Friday, but maybe a Friday a month. I don't remember. It's all so fucking blurry. But there was a Critical Mass bike ride in Lawrence, and I would go to those and ride my bike. And that was cool. And I helped out with Food Not Bombs a time or two there, preparing and serving. I don't remember many details about it. It was a long time ago, and I just kind of hung out, helped make food, and helped serve food a time or two. And that was really it in Lawrence. There was a lot of activism going on in Lawrence when I was there. There was the anarchist bookstore. The Pirate House kids were constantly doing shit with other anarchists. There was a... It was like right before you moved in with me. There was some huge anarchist gathering in Lawrence at the Pirate House, and it was like a weekend long conference. I don't remember all the details, but the Saturday night of that, we had a impromptu 80s dance party at our house, and that was a lot of people said on Sunday that was like the highlight of the weekend was the dance party. So that felt pretty cool. That wasn't doing any activism, that was just having a cool party, but a lot of people enjoyed it.
Right. I think that must have been before I moved back to... I think I was still in St. Louis at that time.
It was in the springtime, but
that was right before.
Yeah, I moved back. You moved back in May, and I want to say it was March or April when that happened. Maybe February.
Okay.
I don't know. It was close to when you moved back, but you weren't back yet.
I remember there was a big party for your birthday.
And yeah, that was different.
The reason I decided to move back was because I came to your birthday
party.
I drove 5 hours to come to your birthday party. I had a fucking blast. Made it to my class the next day, 5 hours back.
That's bananas. And did that.
And I was like, I need to just be back in Lawrence. I mean, it's not like leaving my college career in St. Louis at St. Louis Community College was tough, because you know that's where dreams are made right there at St. Louis Community College.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm not trying to diss on community college students. I have myself an associate's degree from Kansas City, Kansas Community College, where I finally graduated with an associate's degree after going to 6 different colleges.
Whatever it takes.
All across the American Midwest.
Whatever it takes.
I was fucking committed.
Did you go to Hutchinson also, or just Butler?
I did not. No, just Butler. I did not go to Hutchinson. I don't think when I was staying with my ex in Hutchinson, I think I was driving back to Butler.
Jesus Christ,
to go to
man.
Class. Yeah.
Your carbon footprint is fucking huge.
Because I could have just switched to Hutch, but I was like, nah, Marty. I mean, you gotta say. And then I just, you know, we broke up and I just dropped out of community college. Right. I went to Metropolitan Community Colleges in Kansas City, Missouri. I went to St. Louis Community College, and then finally Kansas City, Kansas Community College.
You know,
I guess that's not 6. What is that? 5.
I was really hoping you would be a kangaroo.
I did go to UMKC for one semester.
Okay.
So but that's a university.
Right.
So that doesn't count.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
So after Lawrence, I didn't do shit until 2017. And somebody reached out to me and they're like, hey, we're starting a group of people trying to do shit. And I was like, all right, it seems like the right time. I started a punk band and started doing activism again in 2017. And it was, you know, I was hesitant to do it just because of my experiences before with people being assholes in activist communities. And, you know, we got co-opted by Democratic Party operatives. I didn't know at the time. So, you know, it was in, on my part, it was in good faith to try and disrupt the Democratic Party from within. So I became a precinct committee person for my precinct, which is, you know, you run for election for that office. So I've won a couple elections as a precinct committee person. And then you just try to work with the Democratic Party. And I thought maybe on a local level, I could do some disruption and make some changes. But I quickly learned that I was being a dumbass because the Democratic Party is rotten from the very localist level all the way to the fucking top, and it's a fucking joke. They wanted me to be a delegate. You know, if you do this, you're expected to support whatever the Democratic nominee was. And that was when Bernie Sanders was still running. So, you know, that's kind of why I was involved, because while Bernie Sanders was the compromise candidate, he was still, at the time, somebody who I felt like I could vote for instead of voting for someone because I was against the other person.
Right.
You know, I wasn't, my vote wasn't going against someone. It would have been going towards Bernie Sanders. So when they told me I was expected to support whatever Democratic candidate it was, I was like, fuck that. I'm not supporting Hillary Clinton or anybody else. Like, I am only supportive of Bernie Sanders, and if he's not the candidate, then I'm fucking out. And they're like, well, we don't want you to be a delegate then. And I was like, I don't want to be a fucking delegate.
Yeah.
You know, and then I dipped because it was so bad. It was awful. But I did run for another public office. I don't really want to say what it is, but I am currently an elected official. Do the best I can in that role. It's a nonpartisan position, so party politics don't play into it at all. And, you know, I can say that I'm actively supporting people in my community. You know, I'm still very vocal about supporting trans kids, supporting all minorities, all disenfranchised people. And, you know, in my position, that's kind of what I'm known for, is for standing up for people who nobody else gives a shit about. You know, it's really rewarding work, and I love doing what I do.
I have considered running for office before, but I won't say exactly where I live, but, you know, you and I live in politically, at least by American standards, politically very different places. I mean, where I live, the Democratic Party runs everything.
Yeah.
Top to bottom. There is zero Republicans in any office anywhere
right.
in this metropolitan area. And even so yeah, when Jerry Bear talks about, you know, the corruption and how the Democratic Party is rotten from to the core, he's not wrong. There's no way, there's no chance that I could run for office and win anything with my current political positions. It would be I would be unelectable unless I lied about what I stood for.
Yeah. So it's just, I considered trying to run or running for the, you know, my hyper local council, seat, mm-hmm. but it's already pre-decided who it's going to go.
Oh yeah. I mean, sure. You've got to be entrenched in that system
right
up there.
Every once in a while, a more progressive candidate will take on the one selected by the party. And even that progressive candidate isn't as left as I am. Mm-hmm. They're more like a Bernie Sanders type usually. Right. And even they just get knocked out every time. Like they don't even like, I'm just like, you're just wasting your money even running.
Yeah.
It's already been decided. And that's why I've just I'm kind of getting more and more cynical toward electoral politics in this country because it is just a rigged system top to bottom.
I know a lot of people who in the past have been very passionate about voting. And even they're like, nah, I can't, I'm not choosing between Biden and Trump. I'm just not going to do it. And, you know, yeah. Why the fuck would you choose mm-hmm. between the two of them? The differences are mm-hmm. minimal and indiscernible to me. I don't see a difference between them. And I know a lot of people will say that's stupid. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't see much difference. You know, Biden's Labor Department is great. I'll give him that. But, mm-hmm. you know, he lied to particularly black college students with student debt. Completely bald-faced lied to them. He lied to everyone saying they would get another stimulus check. And they got one, but it was only half of what he promised. You know, he lied about a $15 minimum wage. Mm-hmm. He has gotten us into a proxy war with Russia. Mm-hmm. And he is actively supporting a genocide in Palestine. So while I am thankful for what his labor secretary has done for workers, it's not enough. It's just not enough.
Yeah. And they are selling it because I get texts all the time from whoever is writing texts for Barack Obama mm-hmm. and Bernie Sanders and anyone else that, you know, I might have voted for in the past, saying, you know, we have to pull together now. We need you to help fundraise for Joe Biden.
No, just like, fuck no. Come on. I would not encourage anyone to donate to any candidate at this point. Right. Unless it's a local candidate that you know
mm-hmm.
and are familiar with their politics, then, you know, do what you will in a local election. That's where the difference can mm-hmm. be made. You know, as an elected official, I'm not going to say voting doesn't matter because I think it does on a local level. But on national mm-hmm. elections, I mean, what's the fucking point? The parties throw us fucking garbage.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, I'll vote. But for one, in Kansas, my vote doesn't fucking matter for president. It does not fucking matter. And two, I'm not picking between those motherfuckers. You know, I'm Jill Stein, Cornel West. Maybe I'll write in mm-hmm. Free Palestine. I don't know. But I'm not voting for either of the parties. Fuck that shit. It's fucking stupid.
Yeah. And the states we live in, the states we live in, no matter what, a Republican's taking your state. No matter what, a Democrat's taking my state. Yep. Like, I mean, your state's going Trump. Mine's going Biden. It doesn't matter. Like, yeah, you could write in fucking Krusty the Clown.
Yeah.
And it would make no difference for either of us. So I'm trying not to be cynical, but I have no faith in the American political system. And I did for a long time. I was very, you know, in favor of the political system we had. And I felt like you just got to get it at the grassroots level and get those local elections. And then you got to, then you work your way up. And, you know, this really is like a good, you know, our democracy may be slightly flawed, but it's good overall. And I don't even think that anymore.
I think that is a tactic that local parties use to sheep herd people to their parties. You can make a difference on a local level. Join your party. Mm-hmm. Be active in your local party. But the local party is just going to do whatever the fucking national party wants it to do. So, you know, it's fucking pointless.
And the closest thing we have to a third party in this country is, well, third and fourth party are
Libertarian
the Green parties and the Libertarian parties. And all they are punchlines on SNL jokes. That's all they really are. I mean,
you know, the thing that really bothers me is that Republicans don't shit on Libertarians as being spoilers. You know, they don't, they don't attack Libertarians from the right. They don't attack them as spoiler candidates. They just kind of let them be, agree with them on some things and then disagree with them about drugs, basically. Agree with them about, you know, shutting down all the government, but disagree with them on fucking weed. Whereas the Democratic Party will shit on everybody to the left of them, and anybody in the Green Party spoiled it for fucking Al Gore, fucking Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden in 6 months.
We do keep veering off topic, but we also did warn people at the beginning of our podcast that we would veer off topic from time to time.
Wildly, I believe was the word.
Wild.
Veer wildly off topic.
So, you know, if you don't like it and you're still listening, please refer to our intro podcast. We warned you.
Should we talk about religion now?
Sure. We may as well.
Just talk about politics for an hour, so let's talk about religion.
May as well talk about religion. You know, I got some pearl necklaces I gotta mail out to people so they can clutch them.
Yeah. Well, I have a fainting couch. Mm-hmm. I remembered what I wanted to talk about.
Has Buffy night? Yeah. Oh, we haven't talked about passions yet either.
We haven't talked about passions or Buffy, so we should include that.
Oh, shit. Okay, we've got to get into that like right fucking now. Yeah. Okay. So when we were at Boston Apartments, there was this little soap opera called Passions that was on at, I want to say it was on at 2 o'clock?
2 o'clock.
2 p.m. Right. It was on right after Days of Our Lives, right?
I believe that is correct.
Mm-hmm. So we watched this little TV show called Passions.
Incredible.
The soap opera.
Incredible.
Amazing.
Completely off the wall bananas.
I can't believe, looking back on it now, I can't believe that this was on the fucking air. This is so popular.
How did it get on the air? It had witches. It had little people mannequins that came to life. It had...
Had ghosts?
Ghosts. It had a stalker who was a bumbling idiot, but somehow managed to get her man. It had...
It had Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Did it?
That's where she got her start, was on Passions.
What? Wow.
Yeah, you didn't know
no,
that.
No, who'd she play? Yeah. Wait.
She was like the Bennett daughter, she was the little daughter. Well, not little, she was like 16, but yeah, she was the younger daughter, the younger Bennett daughter.
Yeah.
Which I'm pretty sure I'd have to look it up. I think that's correct. If I'm wrong, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, please feel free to reach out to me. And correct me, and we'd love to have you on the show if you're one of our six listeners.
Ethan Crane went on to be in Scrubs.
Yes, he's from Topeka, Kansas,
Kansas.
So, guy who played Ethan Crane, who my wife knows your name and I do not.
Doesn't matter, he's Ethan Crane, it's fine.
He's Ethan Crane, yeah.
He was very funny on Scrubs. He does.
And you know what? Guy who played Ethan Crane... If you also want to be on the show, you're from Kansas.
You're from Kansas. Reach out. Come on. We could.
Oh, chat. He was on Community too.
Yeah. Yes.
Did you see him on Community? Uh-huh. Yeah, he played Subway.
Yeah. Yeah, he's funny. I like him.
Yeah.
I wonder if he...
I think, oh, God, he was on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He's mostly been on comedies, actually.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't know that we can say Passions wasn't a comedy.
That's true.
I can't say that it was a comedy.
Like
a
comedic character.
It wasn't a comedy, but it wasn't not a comedy.
The people who made that show were not making it to be a serious show. There's
no way. No fucking way.
They had the prom episode where they went on a haunted cruise for prom. Mm-hmm. Who goes on a cruise? First of all, what high school sends students on a cruise for prom? And then it turns out that it's a ghost ship, which, by the way, was around the time the movie Ghost Ship came out.
That can't be a coincidence.
Was a terrible fucking movie.
It can't be a coincidence.
Somebody on the Passions writer staff was like, bro, I saw this movie the other night. We have got to include something about a ghost ship on our show.
BJ and Sarah would come watch it with us. Mm-hmm. I think we wound up recording it. And when I say recording it, I don't mean with a DVR. I mean with a VHS tape in a VCR connected to the TV that you had to set a timer for. You couldn't watch anything else while it was recording. Mm-hmm. This was the 90s. And obviously the fan favorite was Timmy. He had fantasy sequences. Sure. He was Matrix Man.
Yeah.
He drank Martimis.
Martimis.
Fucking brilliant. Amazing.
R.I.P. by the way. That actor has passed away. Yeah. That show was, and Timmy, the character that we were just talking about, he was obsessed with Buffy the Vampire Slayer on the show. Mm-hmm. And he was obsessed with
The Matrix.
But the funny thing about him being obsessed with Buffy was that on the TV show Buffy, the character named Spike was obsessed with Passions, the TV show. So in the Buffy universe, Passions exists as a TV show, but in the Passions universe, Buffy exists as a TV show.
You know, I bet there's a connection to St. Elsewhere.
There must be.
Yeah. So when Nick and I moved in together and he finally came up, he warned me that Tuesdays at 7, I could not bother him. I had to leave him alone. He locked himself in his room for an hour, maybe 2 hours, and afterwards we could hang out again. And he was like, I refuse to work on Tuesdays. Don't fuck with my Tuesdays. And I was like, what are you...
It's like a religious holiday. Religious... It was my Sunday.
What do you have going on fucking Tuesdays that you can't hang out with me? And he was like, I'm watching Buffy. And I laughed and laughed and laughed and accused him of only watching it for Sarah Michelle Gellar and how sad and pathetic that was for him. And he was like, have you ever watched it? And I laughed.
Also,
again.
I was way more into Cordelia, by the way.
Right. Who wouldn't be?
Yeah.
And I laughed and laughed and said, no, why the fuck would I watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Up the Punks or something silly like that? And finally, you talked me into watching it with you. And goddamn, that was a good ass show. So we had Buffy and Angel parties because that 99 was season 4. So Angel had split off and gotten his own show with the amazing Glenn Quinn, also RIP. Buffy was an amazing show, and I have convinced most of the people in my life since then to watch it and become fans of it. So I too would not let people fuck with my Tuesdays because it was Buffy and Angel Night.
And to address the elephant in the room, no, neither of us support Joss Whedon.
No.
Joss Whedon is a creep. And
it really sucks
an
what
asshole.
Happened to Charisma Carpenter and Emma Caulfield. I think she had some times with him. Michelle Trachtenberg was not allowed to be alone with him.
Right.
Which
is
really fucking sucks.
I didn't even know that. I found that out later that they wouldn't let Michelle Trachtenberg be in the same room with him. And I was like, Jesus fucking Christ. She was like 15 or 16 at the time. I don't know. She was young.
Terrible.
She was a kid. Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, looking back, and his show Dollhouse was, you know, I watched it and I thought it had some interesting ideas, and looking back, those ideas are maybe more creepy than I let myself think back in the day.
Right. And I watched Dollhouse too. I watched it because I knew it was Joss Whedon, and I really liked Eliza Dushku, mm-hmm. Who played Faith on Buffy, season 3, and then she came back.
Fran Kranz is later seasons, amazing as well.
Yeah. But yeah, the Dollhouse doesn't hold up, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I watched, I think, watch the it, but... first season. Yeah. Firefly mostly holds up, though.
Yeah. Buffy still holds up.
Take comfort in that.
Buffy still holds up. There's a couple episodes that, like, season 6 with Buffy and Spike in the bathroom.
Yes.
That was completely unnecessary, I feel like.
I don't know why. And I even think at the time... And at the time, I was not as, I think, socially conscious as I am now. Mm-hmm. And even at the time, I thought, that's an odd choice.
Yeah. I mean,
would they write that in there?
It's a very clumsy way to send him off to, mm-hmm. quote unquote, become the man he used to be, or he's supposed to be, or whatever, you know?
Right.
To send him on his
and it ruined journey. It ruined the character.
It did,
because Spike was such a likable, even as a bad guy, he was still a likable bad guy, mm-hmm. and
charismatic in a
small
and funny
part due to the actor.
Yeah,
what's that?
Charismatic and funny, just
right.
A really good anti-hero, and then to do that to his character and to Buffy's character, like that's just awful.
They made a few slip ups in the show. That was one. I personally think that killing Tara, or Tara, as Anthony Stewart would have called her. I think killing her was kind of a slip up too. It just seemed kind of unnecessary way to. I mean, it's the whole, like, you know, head in the freezer trope. Like, well, we need Willow to go bad real quick, so how do we do that? Well, we'll kill Tara.
Yeah.
No. Oh, sorry. Spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't seen that
30-year-old
episode.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That whole season 6 arc of Willow getting addicted to magic was not great.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like how that... the writers treated Willow in that, or Tara.
Yeah. But, you know, there were slip-ups, but overall it was a good show. And no matter who was the showrunner, yes, Joss Whedon was the showrunner. He did a lot of the writing. But it was a group collaborative effort. I think in this case, you can absolutely separate the art from the artist, because the thing that made that show great was the work of all the actors and the directors of photography who were not Joss Whedon.
Marty Noxon and Jane Espenson were my favorite writers on the show. Jane Espenson wrote so much of the dialogue that Buffy is known for, the pithy back and forths. A lot of that was Jane Espenson. She's a brilliant writer. Marty Noxon is great as well.
Yeah, it was a collaborative effort. Joss Whedon dreamed up the idea, but he didn't make the show all by himself.
Right.
So I think you can separate the art from the artist. And I would like to do a Buffy rewatch soon. I think it's on one of the streaming services. I don't remember which one.
I go through it about once every 2 years. It used to be once a year for a long time. About once every 2 years now. I think I'm on season 7 at the moment, because there's there's a podcast that I listen to called Rewatcher. I don't know if you listen to true crime podcasts or not. I know a lot of people do, but the ladies that do Morbid podcast also do a Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast, and one of the hosts has watched them all and loves them, and the other host has never seen them, so they go episode by episode and review them. They just did season 5 episode 2, so the lady who hasn't seen it is just so befuddled by Dawn. She's just very confused. It's fun to listen to. So as they watch, I'm watching, but I'm like quite a bit ahead of them on season 7 now. And I also decided to rewatch Angel because I haven't done that in like 10 years. So I'm on season 3 of Angel, and they just took his son to the Hell Dimension.
I haven't watched Angel since it was on TV.
Oh, yeah.
Like, as new episodes. So I've actually never done an Angel rewatch.
The first season is not great, but it does have Glenn Quinn. So I think it's...
Yes, and he is.
It's worth rewatching just for that. Season 2 is pretty fucking cheesy. But you get a lot of Darla content. Yeah.
I think... I always like, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of stuff that I liked on Angel, but I think just, I still have a bad taste in my mouth because of like, they just did Cordelia so dirty on that show. Did. Yeah. It's just like, and I was such a fan of her character.
Well, and she had such a great redemption arc in Angel. Absolutely. She got to be a fully fleshed out character. Like in Buffy, she was like the mean girl. You know, she got to do a lot of great, funny stuff in Buffy, but she was never fully fleshed out, I don't feel like.
She was the mean girl comic relief.
Right. Yeah. And it was great. But
she was the comic relief reliefs were her and Xander, basically.
Yeah. And in Angel, she got to be, at least for the first couple seasons, got to be a complete character and was incredible. And then they just, they did her dirty. Because she got fucking pregnant. Unfucking believable.
And Joss Whedon's fucking prick. Like, I mean, just write it into the show. Write it into the show. It's a show about demons and magic and shit.
Right.
Is it that hard to write that into the show? Seriously. Yeah. Like, they did it. They did it in fucking Star Trek. In Deep Space Nine, when Nana Visitor, who played Major Kira on Deep Space Nine, got pregnant, they made up some weird Star Trek reason why she was pregnant. It's because Keiko O'Brien, who was Chief Miles O'Brien's wife, was pregnant, and some alien virus attacked her. I don't even remember the exact thing. Something attacked her, and so they had to transmit the fetus into
science fiction reasons.
The nearest somebody else who could host, and Major Kira volunteered, and so she was pregnant for a season. Well, they wrote it into the show.
In season one,
not that difficult.
In season one, they had Cordelia get pregnant with a demon baby, and it only lasted an episode. But then, you know, in season 4, they did have her being pregnant for much of that season, but they wound up writing her off of the show because she turned into a fucking higher being. It's so bad what they did to her, and I'm not there yet. I want to see how that all pans out because I haven't watched that. I haven't watched season 4 since it was on the air, so that was 2002, I think.
Yeah, it sounds about right. Yeah, 22 years ago. I still have, even though I haven't watched Angel since it was on, I have very like sharp memories of how things went down. I don't know why my memory for TV shows is so good, but stuff I actually experienced, I don't know. Maybe that's just something about our generation, our Gen X generation. I don't know. The forgotten ones. We remember TV shows better than we remember other stuff.
Right. While we're talking about television, you know, everything stopped for The Simpsons on Sunday.
Yep.
Especially when we lived in Lawrence, we would go to the replay, and they turned off the jukebox. Nobody was allowed to talk. The bar watched The Simpsons.
Yep.
It even lasted up until like 2008 was the last time I experienced The Simpsons at the Replay, because my band was playing a show there, and we had to wait for The Simpsons to finish before we could play the show. We were playing on Sunday, and we had to wait for The Simpsons to finish.
I think the Replay now is, at least the last couple times I went there, it was just, no matter what, you got to pay $5 to get in, and it's a DJ almost every time. But that was Boston Apartments. We had Passions, we had Buffy, and I remember I watched Passions every day, and you did too, because at least at that time we didn't have jobs.
Yeah, for a little while. Yeah, that's how we started watching. And Pokemon was on after that, and sometimes Seventh Heaven, which was a terrible fucking show, just fucking
Seventh Heaven.
And we would watch it and talk shit. Just... And that dude turned out to be a fucking pedophile.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck that guy. Yeah. And Taylor, our friend Taylor, didn't she like go to acting camp or something with fucking Jessica Biel and just fucking hate her?
Yeah.
Wasn't there some fucking story about that?
Yeah, I think she did. And then I felt real guilty because I'd had a crush on Jessica Biel. Mm-hmm. I was like, I mean, it's not like I'm ever going to meet her.
Right.
So, it's fine.
Taylor said she was like a huge asshole. So
yeah, which I mean, we were just talking about this earlier with Jerry Seinfeld. Yeah. It's not really that surprising.
No,
I mean, a lot of these people are just assholes.
I think,
and I don't know.
I mean, I think a certain kind of person becomes successful in the entertainment industry and becomes. Mm-hmm. Stupid famous, and I think those people are typically highly narcissistic and probably have a bit of sociopathy.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that doesn't mean they're a murderer. It just means that they have a personality type that cares less about other people's feelings and allows them to do what it takes to become rich and famous, and like I don't have that in me.
I don't like that. I don't think I would thrive well in that environment.
I don't know that you would ever get to really be yourself. There would always be a certain amount of performance that you would have to do when people are around, and I just can't do that. So we didn't really talk much about the Kansas City scene this week or the Boston Apartments or anything. We planned on it. And then we veered wildly off topic. I felt like other stuff was important, and then we decided to talk about other things. That might just be what we do sometimes. But if you liked our discussion about popular culture topics and our discussions about TV shows and whatnot, we are going to start reviewing movies. I think we're going to do one on The Outhouse, and that's going to be free for everyone. And then going forward, when we do movie reviews, we'll probably make that Patreon exclusives or something of the sort. It's not going to be whatever movies we want. It's going to be punk rock movies or punk rock adjacent movies, something vaguely to do with punk or maybe even metal sometimes. If you like that discussion, if we entertained you with that, consider becoming a patron and listen to us do movie reviews. I think Neckbone has a name for what those will be. I don't remember what it is.
Well, for movie reviews, the different tiers.
No. For whatever we're calling movie review.
I think we're just calling it punk rock movie reviews.
Oh, okay.
Could we come up with a better name?
I don't know. I think that's right.
So we will have another. This is going to be punk rock movie reviews. We do also want to do a different podcast about movies, that is more of us coming up with ideas for movies and maybe even writing scripts and having people submit scripts for us to read on air too. That'd be a completely different thing though. That's going to be further down the line. But this is, yeah, the Punk Rock Movie Reviews. The first one is going to be next week. And that first one will be free. It's going to be the Outhouse documentary. Oh, also, if you want to suggest a punk rock movie review for us to do, feel free to do that. I mean, obviously, it has to be tied to, like, punk rock or at least music somehow.
Yeah. And after said suggestion, if you want to come on and talk about it with us, that'd be rad, too. I mean, Sarah...
Yeah.
Last episode, Sarah suggested we watch River's Edge, which is a great movie. I don't know how punk rock it is. I mean, I know punks love it, but it's more like dorky metalheads, but, you know.
Yeah. Close enough. Yeah. Works for me. We'll have plenty of other stuff. You know, eventually we would like to do the current punk scene in places. And do a podcast about that. But we have families and are old now, so we're not going to a lot of shows. So if there's anyone who is interested in hosting, I mean, obviously you have to be over 21. That should not be a problem with our demographic. I think probably the youngest people who listen to this are 40. But, you know, anyone who goes to shows regularly is over 21 and goes to punk shows specifically.
Why over 21?
It could be... What's that?
Why over 21?
So they can actually go to the shows?
Oh, I mean,
many of the shows are in bars and have age limits. So,
I mean, I still hear about all ages shows, but I don't know.
Okay. I mean, yeah, but just for the versatility, you know, you can still go to an all ages show even after you're 21.
Yeah, but why would you?
But yeah, like, you know, if it's, you know, one, two, or three people or whatever makeup of people that you would like to do, you know, reach out to us. It's something that we can discuss. We're probably not the best people to talk about the current punk scene now.
I said I fucking hate going to shows now.
I went and saw NOFX last July in Tacoma. Mm-hmm. It was a 2-day show. It was a lot of fun, but yeah, I mean, I almost had to call in sick for the week after mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
Like the whole week.
I went to, you know, the Adolescents, the Descendants, and Circle Jerks last month. And yeah, I mean, I was fucking exhausted the next day. It was, you know, and, you know, I don't even drink. It was just a long night. I was outside of my house for a long time, and there were a lot of people around, and it was a lot. It was a lot to deal with.
Yeah, for everybody out there protesting right now, good on you. Gives me hope for this younger generation. I keep hearing that you guys are way more conservative than we were, but I don't know if that's true or not.
I gotta get coffee and pee.
I gotta get coffee and pee too. Let's go out on a high note, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Everybody... but download our episode next week, our punk rock movie podcast, The Outhouse documentary. It should be a lot of fun. We got to figure out how we're going to watch it and when we're going to watch it. But rest assured that when we do, it'll be a good, fun episode. I'm glad that we didn't get too political in this episode.
Yeah,
we kept it. We don't want to get fence riding. Yeah.
Want to do appeal to a mass audience. Keep it lighthearted and jovial. But for real though, our last episode, 4 days in, we had 400 downloads. So that's a lot more than the tens of people I thought were listening. So thanks for listening to this podcast and downloading it.
Yep.
Send in spread the word. And questions. We would like to interact with you.
That would be fun. And if you don't want to subscribe to our Patreon and you can't afford to donate to our coffee page, which is like our tip jar, basically, at least spread the word. That's how you can participate.
Yeah.
You know, tell people, especially people. I know we're kind of, this is kind of a niche podcast for, you know,
middle-aged
Great
punks.
Plains punks from a certain time. But still, you know, if you know people who were part of the scene in Wichita, Lawrence, Manhattan, Topeka, Kansas City, St. Louis, Columbia, Missouri, around this time, and may have been to some of these places,
Oklahoma.
May know some of these people, then let them know. Be like, hey, you know, I listen to this podcast. You should listen to it too. These guys are very entertaining and have amazing voices that totally don't put me to sleep at all.
Yeah.
Or if we do put you to sleep and that works for you, and that's why you listen because you have trouble sleeping at night, that's fine. Do it for that reason.
We could do.
I don't care.
ASMR content as well.
I can do ASMR. it's kind of creeping out. I'm not gonna do that.
It feels really weird and awkward to me to try and promote ourselves. I feel super weird doing it, but I also want people to listen to our podcast because I think it's fun.
Right. I would rather have more listeners than money.
Yes.
If we have just a fuck ton of listeners for either this or any upcoming podcast that we have coming up, that's what I want. Even if we don't make any money, it's just, I like the idea of people listening, building some kind of community and sharing ideas. Use this as a platform to share ideas, you know, via email, via social media, or, you know, participate in our movie reviews, something like that. Because this is, I would like to build this for, you know, all of us, not just me and Jer Bear sitting here talking, which is lots of fun, but it can be more than that. So
totally.
If you can't donate, if you can't participate financially, then participate in other ways by sending an email or telling your friends who you think might be interested in listening.
If you have pictures from back in the day, share those.
Mm-hmm.
I love pictures of me.
Yeah, pictures, video, art, flyers.
Yeah.
Anything like that.
Totally.
Yeah. Take a picture. If you have an old patch from one of the houses or something from back in the day, take a picture of that patch and send it to us. Why not?
Yeah. If you have a shitty band tattoo.
Yes, definitely send that. If you in general have shitty tattoos, my God, especially if you have a tattoo of somebody's face and it doesn't look like their face, those are the best ones. You can send me that. Not personally, send it to our to the podcast email.
What is that email address?
It's neckandjer, as in NECKANDJER, at prairiepunkpress.com. Visit our website at www.prairiepunkpress.com and make sure you like our videos. What do they say? Smash that bell, give us a thumbs up, all that, do all that stuff.
Facebook.
That they always say.
Facebooks.
Yep. Facebook.
Instagrams. Twitters.
Yep.
That's it, I think. I don't have any other social media set up.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I think that's all of them. I don't think we have a TikTok. I mean, I still to this day don't know how TikTok works.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm
it's a mystery.
It's
a mystery to me.
This is the old guy part of me, but I'm just like, isn't TikTok just people dancing and pointing at word bubbles?
We're never going to make it as podcasters because we don't know how to TikTok.
I still don't know what the fuck TikTok is for. It's great. It's apparently helping people get organized in organizing protests and things like that. So that's great.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still don't. Other than that, I don't really know. But it's for other than dancing and pointing at word bubbles.
I mean, I could do the Muppet dance to different punk rock songs and tell people to come to our website and listen to us.
Oh, I could do the thing where I jump through
your leg.
Do my leg jump, and point at a word bubble saying, you know, visit us or something at our website.
Yeah.
That's cool, right? Am I still cool?
Yeah. You'll always be cool to me.
Oh, thanks. So the way that we measured that we're cool is we spent this podcast talking about everything from current politics to early 2000s politics to Buffy the Vampire Slayer, soap operas, including Passions and Days of Our Lives.
A decent amount of Seinfeld.
A little bit of Star Trek, because I got to sprinkle some Star Trek in that shit.
I can talk about Star Wars real quick. I was playing lightsabers and laser blasters with my 8-year-old earlier tonight, and she had lots of questions about Darth Vader. So, you know, I told her about how, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi cut his limbs off, and how Darth Sidious saved him from the volcano, and then she stabbed me multiple times with Luke's lightsaber, and she was being Princess Leia.
I can't believe that you didn't say spoilers before that whole what you said happened in Star Wars. Now people who haven't seen any Star Wars have just had that ruined for them.
Have you seen the remake of Willard?
Starring, is a remake of it?
Yeah, starring Crispin Glover.
The one from like 2004, right?
Yeah,
2003?
Yeah, 3 or
2002?
Yeah. Somewhere around there.
Yeah, yeah. So that came out when I worked at the video store. Yeah, and, I got an early copy.
Crispin Glover also covers the Michael Jackson song, Ben, and it is one of the greatest things in the world. That'll be all.
So is that going to be a punk rock movie review? Could be.
Crispin Glover is pretty fucking punk rock.
I mean, I think anything with Crispin Glover in it is fair game, honestly.
Yeah. Bobcat Goldthwait is also punk rock?
Yes. We'll talk about this maybe in a different podcast or just offline, but I need you to tap him to direct some of our movie ideas.
Oh.
Because, you've got the connection, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and one of them is directly, well, not so directly, but was inspired by me wanting to make fun of Jerry Seinfeld. So I don't know. He might be. I know he's got beef with Jerry Seinfeld. So
yeah,
if he'd be interested, I can afford to pay him nothing. We're gonna have to do a crowdfund for
convince Bobcat Goldthwait to direct our movie.
Yep,
sounds good.
It's making fun of Jerry Seinfeld. That should be payment enough.
Yeah, I mean he would be into it. The only other comedian beef that I love more than Bobcat Goldthwait and Jerry Seinfeld is David Cross and that one motherfucker who's not really a redneck,
but
pretends to be a redneck.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That
Jay Leno ass motherfucker before he.
Right.
Before he.
The guy from Omaha who tries to sound like he's from Mississippi.
Yeah.
Bill the something like Bill the trucker, the cable guy, Larry the cable guy. Fuck, I was close.
Yeah, I saw his old stand-up and he was like a cheap ripoff of Jay Leno. He was like the the Timu Jay Leno, and then he started doing his redneck character and got famous that way. And David Cross loves to call him out on that shit, and it's fucking hilarious.
All right, well, bye. I gotta get coffee. I gotta pee. I gotta walk my dog.
We didn't fill any.
Thank
gaps,
you, everybody, for listening.
No gaps.
What's that?
I don't think any gaps were filled this episode.
Oh, there were no gaps filled. We also didn't do any corrections. So, Johnny, I apologize. I have to make a correction. It wasn't vodka he was distilling in his bathtub. I think he said it was cider. I'd have to go back and look through our text. It was not vodka though. He wanted to make that clear, so apologies everybody. It was alcohol, but it was not vodka.